Welcome back to another episode of Vulnerable Views, a podcast where we open up and talk about things that are important to us and topics that are less talked about in our opinion. I'm Faria.
And I'm Shelley.
And we are so excited to share our views with you.
Sometimes I just need time for myself and I just need time to be at home and just watch TV or whatever. And
who am I really, right? Like, what do I like? Like, yeah. How am I? I've always been so focused on trying to get someone to like me that I've never thought about what do I bring to the table.
I find myself like scrolling through the Austin Animal Shelter, like, Instagram account where they have all these cute puppies, and I'm like, should I adopt a dog? Like,
having a written planner, taking that second to actually write it out, gives me a second to do like a quick mental check of, do I really have the time to do this week?
Even if you're really hot and distracted by the dead animal that you're holding.
Oh wow, okay. I am doing these certain things that I used to do in past trauma. So welcome to another episode of Vulnerable Views. We are really excited to have a guest today who's going to help us talk about the Enneagram personality types, as well as attachment styles, love languages, and kind of how that all plays into dating as well as personal growth. So our guest today is Dave Glazer. Dave is a sports performance and an Enneagram coach who is passionate about sharing the benefits of fitness, nutrition, and personal growth to improve mental health. After a couple breakups in 2017, he discovered that our relationships play a big role in our mental health, and he found keys to self-awareness through understanding his challenger personality type. Since that time, he has been educating others about their Enneagram personalities, attachment styles, and love languages on the Believe, Be Real, Be Bold podcast. It's kind of a hard name to say, for authentic dating. So, Dave, thanks for being here. We're so excited to have you here, and it's fun to have another podcast host on our podcast as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it is a mouthful.
Yeah, those three B's got me. I was like, oh, should have practiced saying that.
That's right. I originally wanted to like take a stab at Bumble, the dating app, and that's where the alliteration comes from, is like, all right, well, Bumble is contributing to the toxicity of modern dating, so let's kind of undermine them just a little bit. And that's where the name comes from.
Now I'm kind of curious, I guess, why you think, you mentioned that Bumble is contributing to, how did you put it again? It's contributing to like kind of the, I was like, oh, I didn't even think to get into dating apps, but I feel like that sounds like you have a strong opinion on that.
I certainly do. Yes. The toxicity of modern dating comes from the foundational principles of communication between the feminine and the masculine energies. And when Bumble took their approach, I respect where they're going with creating a safe space for women to date online. I highly respect that part of their platform. But what makes it challenging is that Bumble attracts a passive type of man. And because the woman has to make the first move. And oftentimes when that occurs, it kind of jumbles and creates a misinterpretation of the underlying subconscious communication that occurs between the masculine and the feminine energies.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
I'm curious, like, you know, as you talk about the phrase modern dating, how, and that's kind of a broad question, I'm trying to like narrow it down, make it easy to answer, but like when you say modern dating, what are you comparing that to?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I think it's definitely worth exploring over the next 2 to 5 years of the results and the fallout of what dating during a pandemic looks like. So modern dating is basically bringing technology into the process. So before we had dating apps, we had dating websites. And they're at least 15 years old, if not just a few years older than that. So we started with eHarmony and Match.com and Plenty of Fish. And those were the precursors to the apps. When the smartphone came around, and just phones before that, the cell phone. Let's just use that as an example, because I think that communication is very relatable to everybody. And the way that we communicate is different now than it ever has been before. So when the cell phone came out and people started to text more often than they called, this is when modern dating started. Because we added in a new technology that meant people were accessible. And then it changed our expectations around dating. So why aren't you texting me back within 24 hours? And how did this become a rule? Well, it's not a rule. You get to text back when you're available. And you get to text back when you want to. That's the personal boundary that you have. And when we come to a new way of meeting people, when we come to a new way of communicating with people, like texting, then there are definitely unwritten rules and definitely unspoken expectations. And I believe that there's a lot of natural behavior that's coming back into our society now that we don't have the ability to have 10 or 15 options. So I'm going to just throw this out there and say that sheltering in place and a global pandemic was the best thing to ever happen to modern society, because it forced us to reprioritize what's important to us. And yes, I'm coming from my own perspective there, because I was on the hamster wheel. I was go, go, go all the time. I had three businesses and I was working for a corporate gym, and I wasn't dating in the beginning of 2020. So at least I didn't have that as a mindset of like, I have to have a relationship to feel like I'm worthy. There was a reset for me before there was a forced reset. So I lose my job in March and I wasn't dating, but I was still having conversations. You know, social media brings us closer together. At that time, I was using Facebook and Instagram to deepen connections, but I also have the podcast too, where I get to speak to experts on a weekly basis during a quarantine and picking their brain on what modern dating is now going to be like, where we can't and should not, for our health, our physical health, meet more than one person in person at the same time. Because now we're just increasing our risk, our physical health and our risk. So I lost my job in March, the gym closed, and then I spent the next 2 months focusing on my online personal training business. And then at the end of May, I decided, well, if everything feels like a long distance relationship, I feel comfortable coming from my avoidant attachment style. I feel comfortable getting back out there and starting. I downloaded Hinge again. And within a week or so, I had 4 online virtual dates lined up. And I got to choose between those 4 who was choosing me. And I got to feel the vibe. Okay, well, if you're not accepting a virtual FaceTime date or a Zoom date with me during a global pandemic, you're not the right person for me anyways. So I'm going to say no. Thank you, though. Because I have my health and my roommate's health and my daughter's health and my jiu-jitsu teammate's health to consider. And so I used the global pandemic and sheltering in place as a way to set healthy boundaries for myself first, by taking the 2.5 months to build my business and then deciding to get back out there. Then when I did, I set the healthy boundary around how many people am I going to see in person within a 2-week time frame, so that my health, my physical health is a priority for me. And then when I do see somebody in person, the day of the date, let's say I met somebody on Hinge and we had a spark enough to exchange numbers and enough to go meet for coffee, because that's my typical first date, either tea or coffee or whatever. The day of the date, I ask, hey, what are your boundaries around dating during a global pandemic or meeting up during this time? And it gives me another opportunity to learn more about that person, where they sit now, and are their values matching up with mine? Because I don't want to see somebody who's seeing 4 or 5 other people in person. And if their boundaries aren't the same as mine, hey, it was great to talk to you, and I'm actually feeling a little less comfortable about meeting in person right now. So let's put it off. Let's table it. Let's just cancel this date, and we'll come back to it later. And I'm happy to tell you why. Our boundaries just don't match up. And so I was able to use modern dating, texting back and forth, plus sheltering in place, plus a global pandemic, to reset my own intentions around dating, so that when I did put myself back out there, I found somebody who chose me.
Listeners, running out of things to do during quarantine? We wanted to tell you about this cool game called We're Not Really Strangers. This is a card game that encourages deep conversations between players, and it's one that Faria and I recently played on an Instagram Live. Whether you're getting to know someone new or you want to strengthen an existing relationship, this game is a fun way to make that happen. Check them out on Instagram at We're Not Really Strangers. Yeah, so Dave, I'm curious, kind of, I know you and I think have talked about this when you came on, we did a little Instagram live together, which was fun, but I'm just curious to kind of hear like how you went from, you know, you've mentioned you went through a few breakups in 2017, and then you kind of started discovering like how relationships play a big part in our mental health and, you know, kind of going through that, some kind of process of like self-awareness and figuring out how your Enneagram fit into that. So mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm kind of curious, like, I guess in your own words, kind of that journey that you took and from 2017 to now, and kind of how that, and then how your podcast came to be. I'm guessing that kind of fit in with all of no that doubt. Research you're doing too for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So I went through a couple of breakups, and I look back on these two breakups with a lot of gratitude, and I frame them in a, they were very transformational in my life. And a catalyst event for me to make great change for myself. So after the second breakup happened, I received feedback from that partner, and it was all negative. And that didn't sit very well with me. So instead of like continuing on to the rock bottom moment where it takes a lot of men would need to hit rock bottom in order to make great change in their life, I decided to stop it in its tracks, and I sought out a counselor for the second time in my life. But I had taken a really long break between working with those two different counselors. So I sought out my counselor with the intent to ask the question of like, the feedback I received was, you're manipulative and controlling. And for the Enneagram 8, those two words hit home. And those are the two things that we don't want to experience most in our lives. So instead of wallowing in that, instead of hitting rock bottom based on that feedback, I decided to go get some outside eyes on my life. So I sought out my counselor, and we worked together for 20 months. And throughout that time, I improved a lot of self-awareness and grew personally and professionally during that time. I didn't date at all during that time. Excuse me, I should clarify. I didn't get into a relationship during that time, but I was dating throughout that process. And like 3 or 4 months into counseling, that's when the podcast was born. Because I was starting to uncover and peel back all the layers of these past patterns that kept repeating themselves. And in the first few sessions, I did ask, hey, based on the story I just told you about this breakup, am I controlling and manipulative? And Hannah's like, nope, I'm Team Dave all the way. It doesn't sound like that's the behavior that was going on. But when it comes to a relationship, there are always three stories. Mine, my partner's, and then the story of the relationship that's created between the two of them. So that's really the point of where I needed the most help, is outside eyes on my life and my past patterns that I was uncovering through cognitive behavior therapy, and the outside eyes on my life. You know, receiving feedback from an objective observer who cares about me.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's interesting. I feel like I had a similar experience actually with my last relationship, which was with someone last year in 2019. We dated for like 6 months, and I also kind of had that experience of towards the end of our relationship, I got some negative feedback from him, and I never actually thought of it until you just mentioned how it connected with your Enneagram. But I'm a type 2. Actually, Fari and I are both type 2, which is interesting. But the feedback I got from him, or one of the pieces of feedback, was like that he felt like I think the words he used were, you haven't been treating me well. And that was like really, I think it's similar to what you're saying. We're like, for a type two, like we're kind of the giver, the helper. Like that is like kind of my worst nightmare, is like, oh, someone feels like I'm not treating them well, or I'm not, like something I'm doing is causing them to feel hurt or something. So, so yeah, it is just really interesting when you get that feedback and you're like, oh, this is really like it, yeah, hits a nerve, kind of like what you're saying with, and connected to the Enneagram too, where it's like, oh, this is the opposite of what I would want to be. But also, and I also kind of talked through it with my therapist that I have as well, and yeah, so I thought that was great how you kind of explained, you know, I think talking to a counselor or a therapist can be really helpful, because they are kind of that objective third party person who can be like, from what you've explained, it doesn't sound like you were, you know, treating him badly, or you're, you know, like, I think my first thought is always like, oh, am I the toxic person? Am I just like this terrible girlfriend or something? And it's like, okay. And I love how you said too, like, there's always three sides of the story. So I think that's a good way to look at it. Cause it's like, okay, he was experiencing something that, and I think it was good feedback for me to hear, and it's good for me to reflect on that. And, you know, but, and then it's like, I was experiencing something completely different. And then there's that third story of, yeah, the relationship. Yeah. But yeah, I think, anyway, that was just, as you were talking, I was like, wow, I had this, I had never thought about that kind of connection between what our Enneagram, like those core things that we want to be, or that we want to be viewed as. So yeah, and I guess for people listening who might not know much about the Enneagram personality test, do you want to kind of give a brief overview of that and maybe talk about like what your challenger personality, what that kind of means? And I guess, yeah, it's funny, Fari and I, the other day I was like, oh, we're going to be talking about Enneagrams. Like, I was talking to Fari. I was like, I don't know if we've actually ever talked about this together. And I realized, I was like, what is your type? And we realized we were the same one, which made sense because I think we do have a lot of similarities, but yeah, all the types are very fascinating to me.
Yeah. So. And type two is the helper, I think, right? Is the, yeah.
Yeah. The helper. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And type eight is the challenger, which is what you are, Dave.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get along really well.
Oh, yay. That is awesome.
So to answer your question, I found the Enneagram about 3.5 years ago. So I was still in the first of the two relationships in 2017 that I mentioned earlier. This was the more transformational of the two, because we were together for 3.5 years and we lived together for a year of that time. And for the last 8 or 10 months of the relationship, we chose not to live together any longer, for a lot of reasons, but we still tried to make the relationship work. She happened to be a helper, which is giving me a lot of framework to uncover the compatibility of those two types, which we can get into later. But I went to a workshop for the Enneagram, and the person who was running this workshop ended up becoming a mentor of mine in the Enneagram, and she chose to bring up panelists from each and every Enneagram type. All 9 types had their opportunity to be up in front of the room, and an 8 loved that. I was the only 8 in the room for reasons that we can talk about later, but like, I had the mic, I had the spotlight, she was asking me all these questions, and there was a lot of personal growth that I saw in reflection of those questions, and then the room too. You know, the room just kind of like softened me up, and it created a safe space for me to talk about who I was as the challenger. But what I uncovered in that workshop is that, oh my gosh, these are the reasons why we're having so many challenges in this relationship. And that's what helped me transform after it eventually ended, because I wanted to grow and she really didn't want to look at her shadow that closely. Does that resonate as the helper of like looking at your shadow, the dark side of your personality type?
Yeah, I think I need 2 more. And I was reading a little bit more about the Enneagram before we hopped on, and it was like the helper sometimes doesn't want to go into that dark side because they love to look at themselves as like positive and nice. And yeah, I got to go back there.
Even just the way you say it is like so so spot on.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like the last guy I was talking to recently, he said it in a way that was like funny, but also kind of embarrassing. That brings his tone. He was like dating, or like, yeah, talking to me, dating me. He's like, it's like holding a hedgehog. It's really cute. And then the spikes come out. And I was like, oh, okay. And I had kind of heard some variation of that, but I was like, very well put, of like, yeah, being this like nice, helping, kind person, but then having this dark side that comes out, particularly when I'm feeling insecure. But yeah, that I need to do work on, I think, in order to be in a fulfilling, healthy relationship.
Yeah, let me ask you a follow-up question based on that description, because I was really adept at becoming more self-aware through the Enneagram. So we tend, as the helper, to be very conscientious of other people's needs. We can almost anticipate their needs without them asking for them to be met. However, when we do that much work and we don't get the same in return, that's when we become resentful, as opposed to like the spikes on the hedgehog. I would encourage you to look at that resentment that builds over time when your needs aren't getting met but you're so good at meeting other people's needs. Does that land?
Kind of, yeah. I think, like, I may not even realize it consciously, but it's like, it goes back to, like, I think you, there they say you deserve the love that you're willing to put out there, right? So it's like, if I'm doing all this, and I think slowly when somebody else may not be starting to, or like maybe they are, but love languages, right? Like I'm not hearing that they are in whatever way they're communicating, then yeah, the spikes start to poke.
Very well said. How about you, Shelly? Did that resonate?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I actually worked with a life coach back in 2017. Yeah, so a few years ago now. And we did a lot of work on a lot of shadow work, and that was something that I'd never really even heard much about or knew much about. And it was definitely hard work. It was, we did a lot of interesting exercises of like, she had me write down all of like a list of words that I wanted, like kind of qualities that I wanted to have in myself, and then qualities that I felt like I didn't like about myself or think, you know, it's kind of like, those are the shadow parts that you have to try to like a lot of work around trying to embrace the shadow, but also recognize, you know, ways to improve and stuff like that. And so I would definitely say it is hard for me. I think I like to, it's interesting. I think I like to think of myself, kind of like what Fari was saying too, like as a positive person, or I want to think of myself as being a very, like a good friend, a good partner, a good daughter, like all these different things. And so when there's qualities that I feel like, oh, maybe this is a negative thing about me, or, you know, and it's always mostly it's, you know, with something that I learned from her too, is like all of these words could be positive depending, like even with, yeah, I'm sure like for a challenger, it's like some of the words that maybe to me, I think would be negative. Maybe you would be like, no, that's a great quality, or and vice versa, you know? So I definitely have, I agree with Fari. I think I should do more work on it now. I think, yeah, that was a few years ago now. And I learned a lot, and I think I grew a lot from it. And now I'm like, oh yeah, I probably should dive back into that shadow work again, because I think it was, yeah, it really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And then, yeah, I definitely resonate with kind of the last part of what you guys were talking about too, with like, I think, yeah, our helper, personality type, I think I do tend to put a lot into relationships, and I'm like, yeah, and I do feel that resentment growing. And it's, I think that's a good way to put it, is I think I do tend to, I kind of have the hedgehog spiky thing too, where I like to say that I snap easily, like, and it is typically when I'm either feeling anxious, or I think it is around resentment too. I think I've realized, like, yeah, if there's something that's I've been building up resentment about, but maybe we haven't talked about it, or maybe I'm just, yeah, I'm feeling like the other person is not giving as much as I'm giving, then it's like it'll come out in little ways where I'll just like snap at them for something stupid, like that's not even related, obviously, but it's just and that was also some of that feedback I got from that past relationship that I mentioned earlier, where he was like, you're just like always, I feel like you just snap at me really easily, and I'm like, I don't mean to do it, it just yeah, it comes out sometimes without, it's not like a conscious thing that I'm choosing to do, but yeah, Dave, I think you're right that it is very connected to resentment. And I think when you start building up that resentment, and yeah, as the helper, it's like, why are they not putting as much effort as me, or why are they not doing these things that I'm doing for them? But then, and Fari, I like how you mentioned the love languages too. It's like sometimes maybe they are doing certain things. Like my love languages are words of affirmation and physical touch. And my longest relationship that I was in, our love languages were completely opposite. So his top one was acts of service, and then quality time, I think. And so, and his like bottom one was words of affirmation. So it was like, oh, I'm always telling him, you know, that I love him, or that he looks really nice today, or that, you know, I'm always giving him words of affirmation, but he doesn't really care about that. So then I get resentful that he's not giving that back to me, but he is doing these little acts of service that to him, that's how he shows love, you know? So it's, yeah, it is interesting how you can, I think, build resentment around love languages as well as the just Enneagram types, kind of, mm-hmm. If you don't, and then it, yeah, goes back to communication, I'm sure.
But let's go ahead and like share with the audience just a little bit more beyond the helper, but why we can start with the helper in regards to talking about the challenger is that When I'm at my best, I actually move across the Enneagram typing system towards the helper. I become a lot more like yourselves when I'm at my best, when I'm taking care of me with healthy self-care, physical activity, focusing on my mental health, choosing the right partner. I become more like yourselves when you guys are at your best. And that's why I love this conversation of the relatability and the compatibility between an 8 and a 2 on the Enneagram. Because when I'm at my worst, that's when the possessive, or that's when, the intensity goes over the top. Like I think, Shelley, you said earlier that the shadow could be deemed as like a positive trait for me, but a negative trait from somebody else. And my intensity can be either like a steamroller, or it can be like a pursuit of my passions. And that's how the shadow shows up, like a steamroller over here, versus the intensity that I bring as the challenger towards my life's pursuit of sharing the benefits of fitness, nutrition, and personal growth for mental health.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think, I hadn't really thought of that idea of, you know, obviously we all go through different phases of maybe being our mental health being better or worse, or, you know, and we're all, none of us are at our best 24/7. So yeah, it's really interesting that you've kind of been able to identify like, okay, when I'm at my best, I actually am closer to this other type, and then there's probably ways to, you know, for everyone, I'm guessing for people listening, it's like, they can probably figure out, okay, what is my type? But then also when I'm at my worst versus when I'm at my best, like what different traits come out or what are different things that I need to kind of watch out for that might be, because I think, yeah, I feel like Faria, I'm curious if you feel this way too. I think with the helper, kind of just thinking on the fly here, the first thing that came to mind for me is like, I think when I'm at my worst, I tend to be not having that self-care or that like self-love as much. And I'm just, and I kind of excuse it as like, oh, but I am taking care of other people, or I'm doing, you know, even my career is very, it's a caring, you know, caring for kids. So it's like, I'm just constantly kind of taking care of other people. And I think when I'm at my best, I'm able to also be helping and taking care of myself. And then when I'm at my worst, it's kind of like, I start to neglect all of my own personal like self-care, and my mental health is not as good, obviously, because that's all connected. But yeah, I'm curious, Faria, do you feel like that too? Or do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I think with the helper, one of the things I was reading about too is like, it's very much a people pleaser kind of a Enneagram type. So, and like, I know you and I have talked in the past about like being in these positions where we just gave and gave and gave. I used to be like a workaholic and like worked 18 hours out of the day and stuff. And so I was always just giving to other people because that is what I thought brought me joy. And it did make me happy in a sense, but I wasn't fully taking care of myself, right? So I think, yeah, just that giving so much where you're just spent and you're not taking care of yourself is a worst. And I would think insecurity is another area where like when I'm at my worst, I'm super, super insecure and unable to be confident in myself, which I think affects so many areas of my life then, like dating, work, relationships with family, like because you're just not feeling at your truest self, or I guess your highest self that you could be.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really astute. That's a good observation of oneself. That's really cool.
Thank you.
Hi guys, enjoying our podcast? Then you might enjoy another one. We wanted to recommend a podcast we've recently discovered called The Happiness Lab. This podcast is by Yale professor Dr. Lori Santos, and it dives deep into the science behind happiness and how we can use that to be happier in our own lives. We're already on episode 4, and we love it. Check it out and let us know what you think. You can reach out to us on Instagram at vulnerableviews, or you can send us an email at vulnerableviewspodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
When I found the Enneagram, I was craving personal growth. I was knowing that I wasn't getting as much out of life as I wanted to. I had a gut instinct that the relationship that I was in wasn't going to last because of some things that came up, like violation of trust, lies by omission, and really just not treating each other at our best. So when I found the Enneagram and I learned that my personality type is very intense, like an all-in or nothing kind of a guy, well, I did the same exact thing with self-awareness and personal growth, is I chose to dive all the way in, not just dip a toe in the personal growth and self-awareness world. I chose to like dive into the deep end. I'm able to look at my shadow as the type eight, but I did it so intensely that I'm just like, all right, here's my starting line. Is that the finish line over there? I'm going to sprint to the finish line. And what that did for me is it actually made me skip over some very important steps along the way that I've since uncovered were very important for me to learn about myself, one of which is humility. that's part of my shadow, is this egocentric behavior when I'm at average health. It's like, I look at me first, whether that comes to my business or it comes to my podcast or it comes to my relationship. And we could talk about entitlement. We can talk about resentment. And because it's all part of the conversation of both of our personality types, since we're so close to each other. But I skipped over these really important steps in the process because I was so intense about getting to the finish line. Well, the key piece of the puzzle and what brings me that humility is that understanding personal growth and self-awareness, the more we do it, the more we understand that there is no finish line and that we will never actually arrive at a fully integrated self. And we can get philosophical here, but like it truly is about the journey of self-awareness versus the end destination. Because the more we grow personally, the more we become more self-aware, the less we actually care about the destination and the more the destination actually changes for us individually.
Yeah, I think I've heard that somewhere. It was something like akin to like the highest level of self-actualization and like self-awareness is like, I think monks are the only living people who have like ever been able to achieve that or at the highest level. So it's like, unless you're planning on being a full-time monk, which I don't think is in any of our career paths, like,
challenge,
yeah, you're not
accepted.
Gonna, like, right?
Like, I'm the challenger, I'll make it happen.
Yeah. Like, you're not, that's not a realistic goal to have, right? So that's so interesting when you talk about the journey, because I think when you say journey, it reminds me of just other, like the word itself, like, you know, we like to think our journeys are like this. It's a podcast. You guys can't see me going upwards. But really, it's
in a linear fashion.
Yeah, in a linear fashion. That's better words for sure. You have great words, by the way, like astute, linear. I am a fan. Yeah, like, so it goes, you know, like a journey in progress is like up and down and up and down. And then like sometimes you might stay down for a while and then up for a minute. And yeah, it's, I guess it's just about remembering why you're on the journey, would you say? And what's important to you in that? Like, who are you trying to be, right? How are you trying to show up? And why are you trying to show up? I would imagine you care for your partner, and that's a big motivator for sure, as well as like being a better person.
Yeah, I think that is the question too, is do we choose to focus on our purpose in life? Or do we choose to focus on the person that we want to be in pursuit of that purpose?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe even a rhetorical question for us to ponder for another day. But if we continue to look through the lens of the Enneagram, each and every Enneagram type of all nine, we have nine levels of health that are incorporated into each type. So I mentioned just a moment ago about average health. At average health, I'm very egocentric. I'm very my way or the highway. I'm still serving other people through my business at that time, but I am focused on my goals. And then when I was talking earlier about me moving across the Enneagram towards the two, when I'm at my healthiest, that would be at like the optimal levels of health for me. So when I become more like that, I have a unique place in this world that I can choose to operate from in pursuit of my lifelong goal, which I mentioned earlier, to share the benefits of fitness and nutrition and personal growth for mental health. But who do I want to show that to? And for me, as the Enneagram 8, I'm always rooting for the underdog, and I'm always wanting the little guy to win. You know, it's a Saturday, so when college football comes on, I'm rooting for the underdog. But in my professional life, through the podcast, who comes to me? It's like single moms come to me. There's no greater underdog than a single mom. How much they have to go through in pursuit of their purpose and their lifelong goals. Well, if I can shed light on the path for them to pursue their dreams and their purpose and their passion, and I can shine that the light through the Enneagram on that path for them, well, then I will be reaching my lifelong goal while also striving to be a better version of myself. All right, that was a big statement that I left you guys with. What are your thoughts there?
You know, when you were talking about, like, I didn't realize there were levels of, like, average health and, like, higher health or whatever. It reminded me of, like, the attachment styles and, like, moving from, like, an anxious or an avoidant style to, like, a secure style. Because there's anxious, fearful, and I think it's called secure attachment is what's healthy. But in the Enneagram, it's, you were saying, like, average was the word you were using. There's average, and then what are the other two?
So integrated would be at our optimal health.
Okay.
Our healthiest version of ourselves. Then we have average health. And then we have disintegrated, which is our least healthy version of ourselves. And I love that you bring up attachment style and attachment theory, because it's my second favorite thing to talk about. And when we layer the two things together, like our Enneagram type and our attachment style, then we can become more self-aware. So continuing on the thread of the conversation of self-awareness and personal growth, these are two strategies and tools that we can implement in our lives to better understand ourselves and our partners too. So I'll just frame it from the reference of the challenger personality type and my fearful avoidant attachment style. Through the attachment styles, yes, we can have a clear picture of what a secure attachment looks like, but our self-awareness is so much more important about, am I anxious predominantly? Am I avoidant predominantly? Or am I secure most of the time? And when it comes to attachment styles, we always have to understand that there's other people involved causing our reactions as our attachment styles. But if we do just focus on our self-awareness and personal growth and the challenger personality type, if I'm at my best, my integrated self, at the top levels of optimal health, then I am predominantly more secure, securely attached. And currently in my life, I'm operating in the levels 1, 2, and 3, optimal health, in my Enneagram type, and I'm more securely attached in my current partnership. But I still feel the ups and downs, the non-linear way that our lives operate, and I do feel myself kind of dropping back into a little avoidant attachment and a little anxious attachment, because the fearful avoidant swings like a pendulum back and forth between the two attachment styles. So if that's a complicated statement, I'm sorry, guys, but like, if the Enneagram is up and down and upper levels of health are at the top, lower levels of health are at the bottom, I can on a daily basis go through all 9 of them from top to bottom of optimal health. And if our attachment styles are like a pendulum swinging back and forth, well, each and every day I can swing from left and I can swing from right. It's my self-awareness of understanding where I'm at that day and that week and that month in relationship to my partner that helps me communicate to them where I'm at and helps me ask for my needs to be met.
Yeah, and just because I know we probably won't have time to go through all the 9 types of the Enneagram, but just for our listeners, if you could kind of explain those 3 attachment styles. I think there's 4 because one's like fearful avoidant, fearful dismissive, maybe?
Dismissive, avoidant, yeah.
If you can take the time to kind of explain what those 3 are, I think that'd be really helpful for our audience.
Sure, of course. Since it's my second favorite thing to talk about ever, I'll just quickly run through. There's actually more than 4, but for our purposes today, we'll just talk about the 4. The anxious attached is about 25% of the population considers themselves anxiously attached. They show up in a relationship like they're closing their fist around a stream of running water. Like, say you turn on your faucet in your bathroom sink and it's just a stream of water. Well, the anxiously attached will try to grab that water if it's love or if it's a relationship or if it's a partner, and they'll try to grab onto it like this. But what that does is just all the water flows outside of their closed fist. Whereas if they need to understand what love is all about, all they need to do is just cup their hands underneath that stream of water, and the love will fill up their life here. So that's anxiously attached. The avoidant attached is like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling too close to my partner. I need to make space, and I need to make distance to feel safe. And that's where the anxious and the avoidant trap comes, because we have the anxious who's chasing the avoidant and the avoidant who's running away. And then the anxious just wants to continue to chase and chase and chase to feel that closeness. And the avoidant is always going to run away to feel that distance so that both types can feel safe. And then we have secure, where about 50% of the population is operating in the secure attachment style, which is really good news for everybody, because about half the people that you meet will be securely attached. They won't always be single because they get snatched up out of the dating pool pretty quick. But the good news is that for both the anxious attachment and the avoidant attachment, the best opportunity to find the healthiest and most ideal love is to pair with a securely attached person.
Yeah, that's going to be Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's going to be my next question is, like, can you be with a secure person, or, like, are you going to, maybe not the best terms, but, like, ruin them, or, like, will they, like, lift you up, right? Like,
no, that's a really good question.
Because I'm anxious.
when an anxiously attached person finds its secure partner, well, the secure partner knows how to show innately the anxiously attached that asking for their needs to be met and that the closeness is actually good for them. Because the secure attached has no problem with closeness. They actually enjoy it. They know that that intimacy is healthy in their relationship. And so it creates a safe space for the anxiously attached person to grow and blossom and to feel less insecure in their relationship, like it's a healthier match. When a securely attached person gets paired up with an avoidantly attached person, same thing happens. Well, the securely attached person understands that independence in a relationship and distance is actually a good thing. So they're going to give their avoidant partner enough space, enough time, in order for the love to grow and blossom on a slower time frame than, say, like two securely people attached or an anxious and a securely attached person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. And then we could go into the fearful avoidant, where it's just like, that's why they call it disorganized, is because it's so confusing for the fearful avoidant to date, because they just receive all these mixed signals because they're swinging back and forth from anxious to avoidant and through the middle of secure all the time.
Oh, that
and that's why
like
they call it disorganized.
Ride. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today. It was so great to hear your story and your perspective on dating and the Enneagram and attachment styles. And I think this is going to be a really helpful and insightful episode for our listeners. So really appreciate having you here. If you guys, for those of you listening, if you want to reach out to Dave or find out more about him, you can follow his podcast Instagram account at Believe Be Real Be Bold on Instagram or Facebook. And then his podcast is called Believe, Be Real, Be Bold. So you can find his podcast on all of the different podcast platforms and also at his website, believebe.realbebold.com. And yeah, Dave, was there anything else you wanted to talk about before we head out?
No, this is a great conversation. I really appreciate you having me on and bringing me on. And those are great places to get a hold of us. And if they're looking for a little extra support, right now, we do weekly group coaching for women on Tuesday nights, men on Monday nights, where we gather with like-minded people to manifest and create our ideal relationship so that we can find our ideal partner through the Enneagram, attachment styles, and love languages. And we'd be happy to offer the listeners a free week trial. So no commitment necessary. Just have them reach out to me on Instagram and they can ask me questions about the group program there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course, thank you.